Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Good afternoon. I'm interviewing veteran Timothy Whittington. He enlisted in the United States Marine Corps, and when he enlisted, he served his country. He was a Corporal E4. Today is Friday, August the 9th, 2019. I'm Marie Steiner, and I will be conducting the interview with Tim. Good afternoon, Tim.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having me here.
First off, I'd like to thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'd like to start with some routine questions. Tim, I understand your parents were Standard Smith Whittington. Your mother was
Corinne Minerva.
Minerva Eli, that's her maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And you were born in Clinton, Missouri.
That's correct.
July 10th, 1946.
Yes.
One of the first questions I have, Tim, is when you were growing up, when did you first know that you wanted to join the service?
Oh, my. As soon as televisions came out and I was able to watch John Wayne, I knew I was going to be a Marine.
All right. And how old would you say you were at that time?
Oh, about 8.
Oh, wow. So you had you already decided that you wanted to be in the Marines?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Marines always, that was always my, it just kind of stuck in my head. I wanted to be a Marine. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And from watching, you know, television programs on television and movies that was made, you know, the Marine Corps was always number one. So that's why you set your goal for the Marines. That was it.
During your military service, I know you continued to reunion with your past military brothers.
Yes.
Why did you take on that responsibility?
Well, experiences, some experiences you never forget. And these men all served with me, and we went through some ordeals together, and therefore, you know, we bonded, and once a Marine, always a Marine. You just don't forget.
Okay.
Right.
And these reunions, how long have you been holding them now?
Next year will be, I think, our 6th reunion. And we reunion every 2 years, and usually in October. That's the coolest part of the year and not so wet, so that's, we try to do it in October.
And of your company, how many brothers did you have in the military service? Were there 50 of you, 100 of you?
Oh, gosh, I can't give you the number. In the company, in Bravo Company?
Yes.
Oh, there was probably 80 to 100 guys.
Okay. And when you first started your reunions, how many of the, I'm going to say, military brothers were you able to contact at that time?
Well, I contacted, 100 guys.
And of the 100, how many RSVP'd that they would make it? How many turned up to?
Well, the first reunion, we had a great turnout. There was about 80 people showed up for our reunion, 80 to 100 people. And over the years here, since they're every 2 years, you know, people get sick, people pass away, and things happen, you know, that prevents them from reunion with
participation.
Us. Yes, yeah.
And what memorabilia have you been able to put together? Have you made scrapbooks, pictures?
Oh, yes. It's more or less a book, yes. You know, like we had a reunion in San Diego. That's where I went through boot camp. And a lot of the guys, you know, went through boot camp in San Diego. And our company first sergeant, who served with us in Vietnam, happened to live in Oceanside, California, which is right outside the base there.
Okay.
And I got a hold of Sergeant Buskowski and had him show up for the reunion, and it was something.
Everyone enjoyed seeing him.
Oh, absolutely. After years, you know.
And you mentioned Vietnam, Tim. What was your enlisted service time? When did you join the service and when were you discharged?
I went in the Marine Corps in July of 1965, and I was discharged in July of 1969. Four-year tour.
So you, how many years or how long did you serve in Vietnam? Where did you do, you did your, San Diego is where you did your training.
First of all, in July you went to boot camp, and that was 11 weeks of training. And then you went to what's called ITR, Infantry Training Regiment, and you went through that. And after that, you was assigned to your permanent unit. Mm-hmm. And from there, we went to Vietnam shortly thereafter. It was, gosh, it was a shock, you know. And the next thing I know, I was on board ship and we was headed for Vietnam. I had no idea where Vietnam was and never heard of it. Didn't what we was getting into, you know, it just.
How old were you when you left for Vietnam, Tim?
I was 18, about 18.
18 years
yes,
old.
Yes, ma'am, yeah.
So had you been anywhere before Vietnam? You said you were born in Clinton, Missouri.
Yes.
Had you ever been outside of Clinton, Missouri?
Well, just here in the state, mostly, and, you know, and the adjoining states, Oklahoma and places like that, yeah.
That you had never been out of the country?
Never, nope.
So how was it in Vietnam? Was it the change of the climate, the change of the people? What was it like?
Yes, it was a change of climate, sure. In the summertime, it was just super hot, and then you get into the fall of the year and the monsoon seasons, it was just a downpour every day, you know, and those are just a couple of the things you had to deal with.
And
it was just
how were you able to adapt to that constant rain, constant heat? Was there something special that you did or something that the service did for the boys?
There was really nothing. We were issued ponchos, what was called ponchos, you know, and it was, you wear those to keep the rain off of you, but it was not 100%.
Uh-huh.
So you didn't wear the ponchos. You just got wet. You just.
Did it dry pretty quickly once it stopped raining?
Well, our uniforms were made of a cotton material, you know, and it took a while. And you had to learn how to adjust to it, sure, you know.
Okay.
There were things you did.
So you said you had to have some training before you went over there. Did the training prepare you for over there? Because, like, what were your duties once you got to Vietnam?
The training introduced you to all of the weapons that you might possibly be using. And that was, you know, and that was basically it, you know. It just prepared you for the material that you was going to be using and what your MOS would require.
What is MOS?
That's your military, that's your job.
Okay.
That's your basic job. It's called an MOS, and I've forgotten what MOS means.
Okay.
Military. So
it's been a few years.
Military Occupational Service, I think.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then what did it prepare you for when you got over to Vietnam?
It was out the window.
It didn't even apply once you got
well,
over there.
Well, it applied, but you know, Vietnam was a different place,
mm-hmm.
a different world altogether. And it was kind of a shock, you
sure.
know, cultural shock. And what was going on there was, you know, you didn't have that everyday life in this country when you was back home. It was just a different world.
And how long were you in Vietnam?
2 years, 4 months, and 14 days.
That's a long time.
Well, that's over two tours of duty in Vietnam, yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time to be away from home. Definitely a long time.
Well, the Marine Corps was my home at the time.
Understand.
That was it, you know.
And these were your brothers, your military brothers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
And there wasn't much time for thought about back home. You couldn't dwell on being home. I don't think, you know, I called home a couple of times, but that was about it. You know, and you wrote letters. And the company, you know, our company officers tried to see to it that we did, you know, correspond with the folks back home, which I did. I wrote letters home, mm-hmm. and they wrote back to me.
What was the living facility like for our boys over there in the service? And what was your What was your menu like? What were you eating over there? I'm curious.
Well, for the most part, it depended on where you was at. If you was on an operation, of course, you was outdoor. You didn't have, you know,
facilities.
That's right.
Okay.
And for chow, it was usually a can of sea rations of some kind.
And this is when you were out in the
yes,
field, so to speak.
That's right. That's
and how long would those outings last?
Oh, Lord. Sometimes a week or two. Or if you was sent to another unit, you know, and you was what was called TAD, you know, you was assigned to that unit, you might be there for months.
So. What was the longest unit that you'd ever been assigned to?
Well, my basic unit, Bravo Company, 7th Motors was my unit. But they, you know, other units needed us too.
Right,
you know,
so they shared.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Is there any memories that still stand out to this day for your time in Vietnam? Some of the memories you had with your brothers over there, your military brothers, and as much as pictures that you took or conversations that you had, how you supported each other over there? Because you said you didn't have time to miss home because you had your military brothers there. Were there times that you had fun, that you actually got to see movies? You had special beverages over there for the boys. What did our country do for our boys while you were in Vietnam? What stands out in your memory?
Not much. There wasn't a whole lot of time for games. We was always busy one way or another. Not to say, every day was different. Mm-hmm. Every day was different, and you never knew what each day was going to bring you, you know. I don't know how to answer that.
Well, let me give you some food for thought. I'm relating it to movies that we here in America see on television, you know, and so I'm thinking, okay, so they must have some recreational time, they must have some special dinners for you, or they must provide you with some kind of sweets that back home only they could have, like Hershey bars or Hershey Kisses or Coca-Cola. Were there any of those kinds of routine days that our boys were treated special, like Christmas
or
Thanksgiving?
Christmas and Thanksgiving could be special, and that depended on where you was at the time. If you was back in the battalion area, you know, you would have a mess hall, you know, and they would prepare, you know, turkey and dressing for Thanksgiving, you know, and a Christmas dinner or whatnot. If you was lucky enough to be there when it was being, you know, served, you know, that you got that. But the rest of the time, you know, if you was in the field, it was a can of sea rations, just whatever you could get to eat. Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, I'm not trying to build it up or anything, but that's just the way it was. That's just the way it was, for us anyway.
While you were over there, did any of the boys take pictures that they shared at the reunion?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Were you surprised at any of those pictures that you didn't even realize they had been taken?
The majority of the fellows that took pictures either lost their pictures or, you know, or they didn't take pictures, one or the other. But while I was in country, I saw to it that I took a lot of pictures. I wanted the memory of the place and the guys.
Well, it was significant of your time in your life. You know, you were very young, so you took in all that. Events that happened in your life at that
yes,
time.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have any regrets about serving our country, Tim?
Oh, heavens, no. No, ma'am, no.
You'd do it again?
Yes, in a flash. Yes, I would.
I truly believe that.
Yes,
I truly believe that. Is there anything more that you'd like to share about your military service before I move on?
Well, I spent... you know, all that time I didn't want to leave my unit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my last tour, the first sergeant got me off to the side and told me, you know, time for you to go home. Your last year is going to be spent in the States. And so I came home. I was sent to Camp Pendleton, California, and I just could not. It was different.
You couldn't adjust to that?
I had a terrible time adjusting to the spit and polish and the things. It was a different world than what I was used to. Mm-hmm. And so I was, that last year, I was miserable, more or less. The camaraderie was different. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, it was a different world.
And I think because possibly they hadn't bonded, there was no need for them to bond.
Well, most of the guys were returnees, you know, that had come back from Vietnam, you know. And it was just, they from different units, you know. And it was just a different world.
So they were having trouble adjusting as well coming back.
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of them did, yes, yeah.
So if you wanted to stay in Vietnam, you'd have to re-enlist then for additional time?
Well, I had, when I came home and was sent to Camp Pendleton, I still had a year left. I could have put in another year in Vietnam, but the company first sergeant decided that, hey, you've had enough, you've been here long enough, and I think you need to go home. So I went home. I did what I was told.
Okay.
Didn't really, I didn't have much choice, you know, just pack your grip and get home.
Okay, I'm going to move on. How did your military service carry over to your working career once you got out of the service and you had to start looking for a livelihood?
The old saying, once a Marine, always a Marine. And when you go through their training, you know, it's a different type of training than most of the other military branches of service. And it sticks with you. You know, you do what you're told, you know, it's yes sir, no sir, do your best, don't give up, hang in there, you know, regardless of how tough it is, and do what you're supposed to do. And that was my philosophy, and it turned out that it created a lot of problems for me.
And can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. You know, I was willing, but the guys, a lot of the fellows that I worked with in my various jobs after I came home, weren't. They didn't care. You know, they were there to do a 40-hour job, and if they just didn't care, you know, how they did it. It was.
So there was no pride in
doing
the job?
Yeah, no pride.
Loyalty.
And loyalty, yeah. It was hard to accept.
I understand, being in the workforce, that hiring a veteran is the best candidate for a job because, as you said, they're used to being on time, loyal. Yeah. They take direction very well. So I kind of understand the frustration that you had there.
It was frustrating. Even the supervisors were... sometimes I just couldn't manage their attitudes. I thought their attitude was out in left field, and you know, it caused, I had some problems.
Were you ever a supervisor that you could be more of the person in charge, so to speak?
I didn't want to do that. I belonged to a union shop, so I went, you know, all my career, working career after I got out of the service, I managed to stay in unions so I could get my retirement. And to become a supervisor, you have to...
give that up.
You have to give it up, you know, and go with what the company gives you, you know. They might afford you a little more money in your 20 years with the service of the company, but I don't know what you'd get when you got out. 401k was the thing that was the biggie, mm-hmm. at that time. And that turned out to be, you know...
When it's gone, it's gone.
It's gone, it's gone, yes.
And your pension goes on and on until you pass away.
Right.
True. That was very smart.
I get a check every month, and I knew that check was going to be there, just like in the military. You know, when payday come around, you got your money.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that leads me to my next question, Tim. What advice would you have for our generations now coming up about serving? I've heard some derogatories in as much as serving our country today. What would be your advice to the generation coming now? What could you say to them
back in the 60s, let's go back to in the 60s, okay? When I was in boot camp, the Los Angeles riots were going on, okay? That was a problem. And then when I went to Vietnam and I served and stayed there and I was, you know, people started, a lot of guys got killed, you know.
Sure.
And people were protesting and raising, you know, having a fit about it out here in all of these, what do you call it, Marie?
The suburbs?
No, when they was out here protesting.
The riots?
The riots, yeah. That was going on. And Marie, we all have an obligation. I mean, the United States is not a free ride. You have to support your country and your government, you know, and you have to stand by them. And when you're a young man, that's part of it. Support your country. Join a service. You know, you don't have to spend your life in it. Mm-hmm. And they have different programs for different lengths of time that you serve, 2 years, 4 years, you know. And if you like it, you stay in and get a retirement out of it. The only thing I don't care for in today's service is the women. I do not think that a lady should be put in a grunt unit where there's live fire coming in and she can be wounded. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just don't think that's right.
Okay.
And those kind of things are going on in today's world. That's the way it is. I can't accept some of the things. I'm sure they couldn't accept things back when I was in the service. So it kind of, you know.
New generation.
Yes.
New generation.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope I'm making sense here.
You do. Well, I'm going to assume a lot here, Tim. When you came back from the service, you were enlisted. So once you got out of the service, you decided you were going to make a home. So I'm saying that you got married in life, had children. And what can you tell me about your wife, Wilma? Do you have any favorite stories from your marriage that you'd like to share? How did you meet Wilma?
That was the best time when I met Wilma. I was driving a truck, and I was coming into Independence from the east on 24 Highway. And I came to a stoplight, and a car pulled up next to me, and it was Wilma. And she leaned over and waved, you know, and a big smile on her face, and I waved back, and her two boys was with her, and they waved. And I made a gesture, you know, give me a call. And so she gave me a call, and we started seeing one another. And 7 years later, we got married. We ran off and got married. Best thing I ever did.
Well, good. And how long have you two been married now?
Over 29 years.
All right. And the two boys are grown now?
Oh, they certainly are. One's retired out of the Air Force, and the other boy lives here in town, has a family, two kids. And he's doing well too, so we're proud of him.
Her first son, the first boy, you said he's retired from the Air Force.
Yes.
Do you think, did he come to you? Did you know, should this be something I do, join the service?
Well, both of the boys were young lads when we married, and so therefore, you know, I acquired the responsibility of trying to raise these boys, you know, and not necessarily raising them, but advising them and trying to, you know, instill in them, you know, what they should do after they get out of school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just kind of had, I told them, you got to Two choices. You know, either you go to college and extend your education, or you go in the military, you know, and do 4 years in the military. And so Mark decided he took the Air Force. Matt went in the Army, and they did their time, got out, and they're, you know, so much the better for it.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. See, so you did have some influence on them, that they did hear what you said.
I think they did. I hope they did, you know. And I know Mark doesn't hold it against me. He, you know, he was,
Yes, you were right.
He gets that check every month, and he's doing well.
Yes.
I'm proud of him.
Yes, yes. Well, let's go back to your military. Tell us about your ribbons and medals that you were given and what the ribbons and medals stand for, that you received them.
Well, that's a hard question because I can't describe the decorations. The only decoration that I didn't get was a Purple Heart. I've always had a thing about that. I've always felt bad, you know.
For not receiving one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And let me ask this question. That was the only regret that you had. How did one of our boys receive the Purple Heart? What had to happen for them to receive?
Well, you had to be wounded.
Okay.
You know.
So I'm thankful that you weren't wounded.
Well, it wouldn't have made any difference to me one way or another.
At the time.
We lost guys in our unit, you know, that was killed and wounded. And here I am, you know, I come out unscathed, you know.
God had another plan for you?
Yeah, I suppose he did.
Yeah, you were there for Wilma and her two boys.
Well, Wilma went through, you know, a period of time in her life where things was pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. And, so you two?
We connected, and we've been doing okay ever since.
It sounded like it,
yes,
29 years.
She's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And I love her dearly, oh my.
And I know you do, Tim.
Yes,
I know
yes,
you both well.
Absolutely.
Okay. These are just some general questions just to make sure that I haven't missed any area that you'd like to share and like to become part of the oral history.
Okay.
What is the most important lesson you learned in life, Tim, would you say? What would you like to say to the next generation that's going to listen to this oral history of you?
Loyalty.
Okay. That is
loyalty in life is the most basic, and if you don't have loyalty, you know, to your family, to your country, to your job, then you don't have anything. To me, that's, loyalty is a factor.
Okay.
Sure.
Are there any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along to this next generation?
Words of wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
Speak when you're spoken to. Keep your mouth shut the rest of the time. Usually get you, you know, that'll get you a long ways, you know. And, just listen to the authority and, you know, live by the rules and regulations of life and you'll be fine. You'll prosper.
What are you proudest of in your life?
Serving my country. Sure. It's a... Yeah, that was a time in my, you know, I was a young man, and just, we're kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically. But nevertheless, you know, it made an impression on me, you know. I love my country, I always have. I'm disappointed in today's world, and I'm worried. Sometimes today I feel like I've lost my country.
And would you say that as you look back on history, that's something the cycle has...
Well, I don't know if you could cycle this or not, but when Vietnam was raging, you know, our country called on us to, you know, to serve and to do what was right for our country. I felt like we was doing, you know, the right thing by going to Vietnam. And as it turned out, apparently it wasn't. You know, and that hurt, you know. They said we didn't win the war. Well, I don't think they didn't let us win the war. You know, we could have won that war, that conflict.
Okay.
But that's the way politics. That ruined everything.
How has your life been different than what you imagined? You had said that as an 8-year-old, watching television is what prompted you to say, I'm going to go into the military, I want to be a Marine. How do you look at your life? Is it what you imagined?
No, it's not.
Is it better?
It's just like everybody else. It's been a rough road to hoe, and it's up to each individual, you know, how you prosper in life and how you go through life. It's up to the individual. Nobody can tell you how to live, you know. It's been rough all my life. You know, my mother passed away when I was just a child, 6 years old. Mm. Lost my mom. And my father was disabled, and it was tough. It was tough as a child, you know. And went through school, got my education, and what are you going to do now? I came from a small town, you know, that's where I was born and raised, in a small town. Where do you go from here? Well, Kansas City was it, you know. Well, I didn't have anybody to come up here and live with, you know, to help me. I was on my own. So I thought, well, that's not going to work. I'll join the service, you know, and get my life started there, you know. And that's what I did. Best thing I ever did, because of the training and the 4 years progressed me into my manhood. And when I came home, I thought I was ready. But I wasn't. I had it all laid out. I'd come home. I was, you know, 22, 23 years old. I'd get married. I'd have a family. I'd get a job, a new home, a new car. And man, I'm set for life. And it just did not. Doesn't work that way.
Okay.
Work that way.
So everybody has choices to make.
Well, what do you mean? In what respect?
Well, when you came out of the service, you said that you were expected these.
Oh,
to
I had it all laid out.
Right.
I had it all laid. I even bought a set of rings, wedding and what do you call it?
Engagement.
Engagement rings. Yeah, I had the big diamonds.
You were ready.
Listen, I had my life laid out, you know, but it didn't pan out that way.
Well, it was kind of like a fork in the road.
Well, it was more than a fork. I'll tell you.
Okay, here's a very important question. How would you like to be remembered, Tim?
Well,
I hear loyalty is one of the big.
A kind and loyal and respectful human being. I know I'm not perfect. No one is. You know, I have a lot of bad things about me. You know, my temperament, and I use bad language. You know, you know, but that's all been part of my life, all my life, and that's hard to overcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easier to go with the flow than it is, you know, easier to go downstream than it is to go upstream.
You
know?
Yes.
It's hard paddling going upstream.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
I think I'm a fair person, you know, and if anybody ever needs anything, you know, I'm the first one there to give them a hand.
I can vouch for that.
Yes.
Let's take for a minute. Let's go back to your service time. You said you were in Vietnam for 2 years. How many months?
2 years, 4 months, 14 days. I was there for the Tet Offensive in 1968.
Okay. And you had said that your commanding officer sent you back to the States because he said you've been there long enough.
Long enough.
And you said you still feel a little remorse, in effect, that your brothers, your military brothers, that didn't come back, here you came back unscathed.
Right.
So it sounds to me like during your service time, can you recall any time you were afraid?
There was a lot of times I was afraid, Marie, you know. You might be in situations, you know, where... And I call them gooks. The enemy, you know, would hit us and put us in a situation where you didn't know whether you was going to get home or not.
And you, during that time, you weren't afraid. I mean,
oh, you'd be well. Sure, you'd be afraid. My Lord, yes.
But I guess I'm trying to understand. When
you can't understand.
I understand that, but I want to get a feel here that when you were sent back. Home, I'm going to call it.
Okay.
You said you didn't want to leave your brothers, but yet you were afraid. But what made you want to stay with your brothers, even though you knew you were going to leave the enemy and you wouldn't have that fear of...
I like the duty.
The duty.
I adapted well to it, I think.
And as much as, Tim, you're going to do this today, you're going to be out here, we're going to go out, get your rations, get your backpack. That's what you like the structure
of the
military, being over there.
Yes.
And the fact that you didn't know what to expect when you went home.
Well, when I came home, it was a shock. It was another cultural shock. Things had changed, Marie, and the situation in the United States at the time when I came home in 1969, it was different. I mean, we had all of these...
Riots,
and it was just a different thing. I wasn't expecting that. And when I came home, I didn't come home to a parade. I came home in the plane, got off the plane, got on a bus, and went home. There wasn't a brass band there to welcome us. You know, maybe people standing there with calling us baby killers and just down, talking down to us. And the only thing we did was serve our country. We did what we were supposed to do. And that was hard to understand.
And I've heard that before.
Yeah. Well, that
not
really
just
happened.
From you,
that,
right?
It, that really happened. Yeah.
Because now you see all the wrong that was done to our boys at that time. That I see our government is trying to right that wrong.
Well, I don't know how far the government has gone to right anything. You know, it just depends on. To get the government to move, you have to create a riot of your own to let them know that you've had enough of the malarkey that you're going through at the time if you think things aren't right. No.
What do you think the government could do to right this wrong, Tim, and as many of our boys who served and, as you said, came home to no parades, no recognition, things were verbally called out to our servicemen when they came home in as much as the time they served, but you had indicated you served your country.
I think a lot of things have changed, and I think they changed after the Vietnam conflict was done. I think things changed in the country towards some of the veterans, and the conflicts that we're going through now, these wars, or they call them wars, Afghanistan and over there in those places. The boys come home, and the VA has made changes for the better, I think they take better care of the veterans today, and listen to the veterans,
And do you think that's because of our boys who served during the Vietnam era?
Well, I think that started it. I think, they look back on that and the veterans of today said, we're not going to put up with that. Make some changes. Take care of these guys that come home. They've been through traumatic situations and they need somebody to talk to, somebody to take care of them during their period of readjusting to the world.
Good.
I mean, there's a lot of vets, Marie, that commit suicide because they don't understand.
They can't adjust, or
it's hard to adjust. It's hard to adjust.
I can't even imagine.
Marie, you're out here, and people are trying to kill you, and you're trying to kill them. You come back to the world, and it's not that way. Well, it's getting that way though. Today it's I never seen anything like it, and nobody has an answer yet. No. It's all political. These wars are all political. And that's the crux of the matter.
Okay, one last area. Your family heritage. You had indicated that your mother passed away when you were 6.
Yes, ma'am.
And your father was disabled.
Yes.
So, I don't know, you were so young when your mother passed away. Was there any traditions that you recall as a child that was you even remember today?
We lived in a small town, and we was like the majority of the people that lived there. We were poor. We didn't have a lot. We didn't have a mansion to live in. We had a home. We had a home, and we had all the necessities, but, you know, we wasn't eating steak and caviar for meals every day.
Okay.
You know, it was tough. And when Mom passed away, it was, you know, what are you going to do when you're 6 years old? You wake up one morning, where's Mom? Well, she's not coming home. You know, you're kind of on your own.
That's tough.
It is. It is tough.
Is there anything in closing that you'd like to share, Tim, that I haven't covered? Is there anything you want to be remembered in this oral history?
Well, I'd just like to be remembered as a citizen of the United States and a veteran of my country. You know, I served my country and did the best I could while I was wearing the uniform. And I'd like to be remembered as a decent human being, you know, that's fair with everyone. I try to be fair. I'm honest, you know. I'm not a thief. I don't believe in that. And I have a family that I love, and my wife has been an inspiration in my life. I'd like to be remembered that I love my wife and my family the most, I think.